From the boardroom to the shop floor, good business runs on good governance. Join esteemed expert in governance, Dr. Nimrod Mbele, for the next hour as he takes us beyond governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa.
Good evening and welcome to yet another edition of Beyond Governance here on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I'm delighted to once again share this space and time with you as we journey through the complexities, if not contradictions, and possibilities of governance in our time. Let's pause, reflect, and engage deeply because how we govern shapes how we live, one might argue. As we open tonight's conversation, it's worth noting that there's obviously a global trade war, which was once an engine of multilateral cooperation, shared growth, has taken. We have noted that has taken a battering in the recent years. The Trump administration first doctrine ushered a new wave of protectionism, disrupted global supply chain, and weakened the very institution meant to uphold trade equity. And against this background, South Africa is now finding itself in a critical juncture, forced to recalibrate its trade relations with the U.S. amidst loud and controversial accusation of supporting genocide in inverted commas. These claims not only test the limits of diplomacy, but also risk unsettling long-standing economic arrangements such as AGOA, upon which thousands of jobs and billions of exports depend on. As I reflect a little bit, we all know the global debates on human rights and state accountability have intensified, particularly against the concerning claim of genocide directed at Afrikaners. You know, for me, what is striking is the silence which persists across much of South African society, including segments of white community. And really, it made me wonder and begin to ask myself a lot of questions. You know, this silence, in my view, may not signal indifference, but rather a deeper unease. And the natural follow-up question for me is it fear of political backlash, a discomforting rooted or discomfort rooted in historical complicity, complicity, or reluctance to confront unsettling parallels between distant conflicts and own past? Or is it simply that some tragedies resonate differently or sharply by identifying distance or selective empathy? Whatever the cause, the silence speaks volumes. In a country that emerged from apartheid and now assets bold moral positions on a global stage, we ask a question: what does our silence, what does our conscience demands of us? In my view, it demands that we do not betray the cause and we vocalize our views irrespective of how uncomfortable the truth might be. Anyway, before we get into the gist of our conversation tonight, let me take this moment to thank the exceptional team behind the show. First, it's Betsy, who is our technical producer of the show, and who ensure that we are connected with our esteemed guests and keep us on track behind the scenes. Then Craig Guthrie, who's on the controller, always pressing the right buttons as we interface with commercial breaks. Last but not least, let me thank Kathy Kayla, who's standing in for Paola and her phenomenal touchdown team. She's back on your radio tomorrow to bring you yet another reinvigorating current affairs. Moving on swiftly, if you miss any part of a previous conversation, not to worry, simply visit our website, which is www.highfm.com. Download that particular podcast and share your views with us as we value your voice. Our SMS line is 34549. And of course, your thoughts and views are most welcome via my X handle, which is _@DrMbele. In our past or in a previous episode, I had a privilege of hosting Jeff Van Rooyen, who is a seasoned blue chip executive who worked in a number of entities such as Exaro, MTN, and Pick n Pay. You know, he also offered a profound insight from his recently published book entitled From Township to Boardroom. I personally found it moving, rewarding, and what the most important thing that really moved me was his humility, clarity of thought, and commitment to ethical leadership. You're welcome to download that particular podcast, share your views with us. And personally, you and I would be aligned in terms of how you felt about it. Moving along, in tonight's show, we are joined by Professor Daniel Meyer from the College of Business and Economics at the University of Johannesburg. Together, we'll be tackling the pressing issues of labor market conditions in South Africa. As we all know that South Africa's economy is not, it's ailing, it's not performing. We're performing way below par. My engagement with Prof here is to critically examine the country's current policies and ask a question, are they generally promoting employment opportunities, or stifling prospects for job creation and economic inclusion? As I put that, I think it's important for us to locate tonight's conversation in a particular context. And perhaps maybe, Prof will allow me to set the scene. Before I set this in, I think it's, let me just quickly bring in Prof here and welcome him. And I will then obviously paint the picture as soon as he joins. Prof, good evening and welcome to Beyond Governance. Thanks for your time.
Good evening. I hope my sound is clear. How's it sounding? Thanks for the invite.
Loud and clear, Prof. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
As we set the scene, Prof, it is important for us to reflect on the current economic trajectory. We all know that South Africa's economy has been exceptionally sluggish over the past decade. We're growing at less than 1%, which is obviously unexpected, unacceptable, given the high unemployment rate that sit north of 40% and 60% of which youth find themselves. So, most of commentators such as yourself, economists, and policy analysts are of the view that South Africa, needs to grow at least by 5 to 6% annually to make a meaningful dent in unemployment. That in a way, Prof, will frame our conversation tonight. But as we are about to start, let's take a quick break and come back. And when we come back, Prof will give us his sense on what is it that needs to be done differently from a macro policy point of view. That promotes economic growth and inclusivity. Let's take a break and be back in a second.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Dembele on 101.9 High FM.
Good evening and welcome to Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Dembele. If you've just joined us, you literally just started our program, and I'm joined by Professor Daniel Meyer from the College of Business and Economics at the University of Johannesburg. Together, Prof and I are tackling the pressing issues of labor market conditions in South Africa. We are critically examining whether the country's current policies are generally promoting employment opportunities or, conversely, stifling prospects for job creation and economic inclusion. Prof, before we took that short break, I pretty much set the scene in terms of our conversation. From where you sit, Prof, we all know that South Africa has obviously had to grow. To what extent do you think are the biggest policies or the major policies that are stifling economic growth that undermines the 5 to 6% that analysts and economists such as yourselves put forward as a requirement to address unemployment rate in the country?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Nimrod. Thanks for the opportunity. Look, you are 100% correct. We need to have economic growth and at least 3% per year or even more. As you said, 5 will be better, but 3 at least, the minimum of that. We have got an economic crisis. Our youth, as you said, more than 60% unemployed. We've got more unemployed people of the economic active population that is working, and that number is declining all the time. So we've got a crisis which we need to resolve urgently, and I feel that the government is not feeling this crisis as we feel it. We are really in a huge crisis, and we need to turn this economic ship around urgently. But there's a number of policies to start off with. Policies. We don't have a clear-cut economic policy, a plan, a master plan. How are we going to turn the ship? So that's my first problem that we've got at the moment. And then also our fiscal policy, our tax collection, our budgeting processes. It wasn't very good when we've got this budget process for this year. We had 3 presentations And I still feel the fiscal policy, which is the budget, is not really 100% focused on developmental outlook for us as the country. So that is my other problem. And then another one is our monetary policy. We have got this very low growth, but we're still keeping the interest rates at very high level. So we need to have lower interest rates for people to expand their business, because high interest rates will allow people to keep money in the bank. They will not invest in additional production capital, for example. So those are the policies that's really the problem. But I've done like a draft opinion piece, which I haven't released yet. I'm a bit scared to release it at this point of time because of various reasons. But the first one is the root cause. Another root cause is our structural problems. We've got massive structural problems. Our infrastructure constraints is the main one. You can drive a Ferrari, but if it has got a 60 kilometer per hour limit on the speed, you cannot drive that fantastic vehicle fast, like 200 kilometers an hour. And I feel our economy is like that. We have got a very modern economy, but we've got this limitation as soon as we push in the accelerator, the lights go off. So we cannot have rapid growth if we have got this capacity problem in terms of infrastructure. And I'm not talking only about electricity. We're talking here about water, our road network. Sewer is a massive problem. Our supply chain system to our ports is a massive problem. All of those infrastructural constraints does cause our trade and exports to be blocked to a certain extent. So we need to have much more capacity in terms of our infrastructure. The second major root cause is overregulation in the economy. Too much government is never good. And specifically in South Africa, I feel that government is too much involved in the economy. There's a lot of policy uncertainty. The overregulation, for example, in the labor regulations, you've got a lot of regulations there. And we've seen the World Bank, as well as other political and economic commentators, talking about the BBBE. That is a blockage for freedom of the economy. So we can discuss it in detail, the BEE, how it's blocking economic growth and development. So there's a lot of regulation that is too much for our economy to grow. And then another one is our corruption. The level of corruption is now higher than it even was under the Zuma administration. For the current one, the corruption is still going upward, and poor governance. You know, there's a lot of the SOEs is examples of poor governance. We are going backwards in terms of the World Bank Governance Index. We're moving backwards. And then the last one is the declining economic base sectors. Those sectors that create huge numbers of jobs. It is agriculture, mining, as well as manufacturing, and then tourism. We don't look after those sectors good enough with good strategies and so on. So those are the root causes why we're not growing. And we can look at solutions maybe next time. But those, I think, would be my main causes of our problems.
Well, thank you very much, Prof, for giving us a sense of what are the challenges that government needs to look at. In your view, you're of the view that the crisis that you are expecting, well, the crisis that you're seeing does not receive the same level of attention by government. And could you just maybe clarify that point for the listener, please?
Thank you. Yes. As me and you and a lot of the public out there feel this crisis every day, we're on the ground level. We speak to people. We speak to people that's unemployed. We speak to students. We speak to a lot of people. I speak to a lot of people, and business people. I go to business chambers once a week, different ones, to see how things are going on the ground level. And if I hear politicians speak, I don't hear that urgency that we have got a crisis and we need to address this crisis. And this is the step 1, 2, 3, 4. How are we going to address this crisis? We just hear the release of the jobs data, but there's nobody from government that is saying, look, this is a crisis. Now we need to do something. There's not a Minister of Economic Development in South Africa. Mm-hmm. There's a Minister of Finance, but he worries about the finances. He shouldn't worry about the development development of the country. We need a minister of economic development, for example. We've got trade and industry and competition, but he's concerned about exports and imports and how to support that. So it's not an overall person that says, look, we need economic development. It's different to economic growth. It's much bigger concept and even inclusive growth. That's another concept. We are very interested in that. We've done a index for local government on inclusive growth for all of the municipalities. We've got a lot of data on that one. So I feel when I listen to politicians, not even President Ramaphosa when he was there with President Trump, said in South Africa we've got a crisis. We need all partners to support us. We need to get out of this big black hole to lift us up, and that will create a positive vibe in South Africa. We will forget about all of the other issues, the crime and things, if we can just get people to work. Because jobs is the cornerstone of the economy, and that is an old theory, and it's still applicable.
You know, you've raised a very pertinent point about, market regulations and the extent to which these regulations are, first and foremost, they do not inspire confidence because there's no clear cut policy. You've also raised issues around financial policy, which is not focused on developmental trajectory. You know, we also made reference of monetary policy, which is not conducive or creating space for private investors. You also gave us a very good insight on the infrastructure requirements, which are not at the level where they ought to be in terms of energy, transportation. And obviously, these are big structural items that you have shared with us. But when you look at the conversation between President Trump and President Ramaphosa, earlier, one got a sense that there is a move towards amendment or realization of BEE legislation, particularly in the telecom space. To what extent do you think this is indicative of a move or more faster paced reform, to accommodate other players, or the Starlink as an issue is just an isolated example? We are likely to see more reform that address the issues that you've painted.
Yeah. Look, my personal opinion, and I will tell you now what I think is happening at the moment. My personal opinion is that we're overregulated. We need the market to flow more easily. There's a lot of barriers and distortion of the market at the moment in terms of a lot of regulations. And we've seen the press releases from that Trump-Ramaphosa meeting that there's going to be some cuts in these regulations for a specific sector. And unfortunately or fortunately, it's in the telecommunications, and immediately Elon Musk's name come into the story. I think it's very unfortunate that people make these type of ad hoc decisions, if I can call it like that. We need, let's say, a broad-based reset at how we regulate the economy. The economy, over the last 30 years, we didn't have a success in the implementation of the BBBE. At this point of time, we can say we haven't been successful in creating jobs on a broad base. It was more narrow base. I can more call this BBBE more a narrow base than a broad base if I look at the number of people that were lifted out of poverty, got jobs. It was just a selected few, in my opinion, that was benefiting from it. And I want us all, if you look at economic development, the upliftment of the quality of life of everybody, not a few. So this now press release that is one of the subsectors, telecommunications, that they can maybe look at releasing some of these regulations for overseas companies, I feel that we need a total reset of everything, because even foreign direct investment could have a negative impact on the economy if it's not implemented correctly. If it's implemented in a corrupt way, the money will still flow outside of the country. Overseas workers will get the jobs and not local people will benefit. So if an overseas company is investing, local must benefit through that, definitely. And in all sectors, we need to relook and reset this. It's not only me that's saying it, but I think World Bank, other commentators are saying, let's have a relook how we can lift more people out of poverty, get them into the economy. Inclusive growth means participation in the economy, and participation is a job. It is very easy to say it, and we need to create jobs urgently. If this telecommunications relaxation of the regulations can bring in jobs for local people, it can give internet wherever you are in the rural areas, in KZN, Eastern Cape. I am for it that we have it, but open market, and the best person, the best company come in, and let's have less regulations, and I think that will open up the economy, more people will be interested. But on the other side, we need this our transformation and redress still to be there, but we need to lift the thousands and millions of people out of poverty to get access to a job.
I couldn't agree with you more. Perhaps maybe, you know, when you look at the, you know, I certainly agree with you on extent to which your perception around overregulation of the market is widely shared. Your perception around distortion of the market purely because that, you know, there's so much red tape and which is counterproductive, it's widely shared, and I concur with you. But for us, you made a very important point that looks at restarting or resetting, you know, the conversation, perhaps maybe. What are the building blocks that you feel are important for us to engage in a constructive manner, taking into account the redress issues, but also having to look at the broad-based, you know, economic improvement? Because in your assessment, you know, we so far the legislations have literally failed to empower majority. They've just benefited a few. The assumption is that to change that particular scenario, we need to get to a point where we're having a conversation as a country. What would you say those are the building blocks of that particular conversation that would lead to a reform that yield significant job opportunities for all South Africans?
Yes, it is a very complicated discussion, and the reason why I haven't released this document, which I did as an opinion piece, is because I'm still thinking and wanting to come up with a new plan. It doesn't help I criticize the legislation, but it doesn't come up with a better plan. And I am thinking, and I want to have this magic solution to our story. But I would say the reason why we don't have a lot of job creation in South Africa is because employers are scared about the labor regulations in the first place. If you appoint somebody, after 3 months, the person is basically fully employed as a permanent employee. And then to get rid of that person, maybe he's not doing a good job. It is very costly for a small business. It can ruin a small business in some cases. And the corporate businesses are also feeling this push. And that is why most of the appointments and jobs in South Africa is part-time jobs. Because in my opinion, these labor regulations are just too tough to work with. So I think that's our first problem that we need to have a relook. And also we need to get the youths into jobs. And government started this youth wage subsidies, but it's a very small project. And we need to extend that as a huge, like let's say a expanded public works project, that we get the youths into the system through these subsidies. So if a business appoint a youth, you will get your tax subsidy for that. So that is very important that we expand that to make these job seekers more attractive to employers with a special labor dispensation for it. And also streamlining the labor regulations as far as we can, to encourage companies to expand their workforce without fear of long-term financial burdens. If a person is fantastic, keep him, but if he's not doing the job as was expected, then he should be able to get rid of a person. I'm just looking for my notes on the BE part of the story, but I would say that we should focus on growth without fear of anything, better education for our people. Because in South Africa, if you've got a good education, like a degree, 90% of degree of graduates get jobs. But we've got this masses of people that's got very low skill and they cannot get jobs. Unfortunately, there's no job. But in the new economy, you need a good skill. So we need like a balanced new strategy that says, okay, education is critically important. We need to improve and we need to have business-friendly policies. Very business-friendly policies. The GNU said they're business-friendly, but when the business side said we want to give some inputs in the budget, they said, no, we don't care about the business side of us. We are caring more about other things. So then suddenly there's a blockage in terms of that. Labor flexibility, and we need to focus on our competitiveness. If we're not competitive, the manufacturing sector will not be revitalized as if we want to do it. We need to do it because it's the one sector that can create a lot of jobs. And then also in terms of our budget, 60% or 60 cents in a rand goes to budget wages, the social grants, and there was another one, the repayments in our debt. The interest on debt, it's 60% of our total budget. And it's not sustainable anymore. We need to reset our fiscal policy to get more funding to development. So development of youth, specifically black people, that they get more opportunities and to be more productive, everything that we do. So we need to reset in terms of skills, the private sector, public collaboration also, and then policy certainty. So these are all macroeconomic type of things, and it will let the economy grow faster. But in a general way, we cannot continue with the BBBE as it is, unfortunately, because it is not working. It's not working. The numbers shows us it's really not working. People are not investing. Because of one of the reasons are BEE, but there's other reasons also, the infrastructure and the crime and other stories. So I think that's basically the principles behind it, without removing it in total. But BEE has got economic impacts, employment impacts, governance impact, supply chain, a lot of things is affected by it.
Those you've given us a mouthful, Prof. We're going to quickly take a break. And when we come back, I want us to relook at some of the issues that you put forward, not only from a critical point of view, but also as a way of providing solutions. Because, I'd like your reflection earlier that about your paper, that you don't only want to criticize, but you also want to provide solutions, because South Africans are interested in solutions. On that point, I want to hear from you. What are the constituencies or entities that you likely to partner with to ensure that some of the solutions that you put forward are being infused in the programming, or at least in the thinking? After the break.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Dembele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. It is now 15 minutes to 7 o'clock. I'm joined by Professor Daniel Meyer from the College of Business and Economics at the University of Johannesburg. Prof and I are tackling the pressing issues of labor market conditions in South Africa. We are critically examining whether the country's current policies are generally promoting employment opportunities or, conversely, stifling prospects for job creation and economic inclusion. Based on what Prof has alluded to, the latter seems to be the issue. Our economic policies are counterproductive. Our economic policies are not creating sufficient jobs as they should. And there's obviously a big policy disconnect. Some of the policies' intentions are noble and are where necessary. However, the implementation has proven otherwise, which means, we have to relook at those policies that Prof spoken about around youth, around business friendly, and around flexibility, around competitiveness, and the ramifications of poor economic growth, as it was, is that when you look at the debt to GDP is quite high, and in a Prof's view is that there are some pockets of excellence, particularly when you look at wage subsidies, for small businesses. However, these subsidies are not enough to create a major dent in employment. Prof also made reference to employment condition. In his view, most of the employers are terrified to employ workers, particularly workers who are not productive or who are not competent, and this obviously creates more liabilities. So in his view, we need to get some level of rescue in that by refining or remodeling employment conditions, so that employers are being given leeway in dismissing or firing workers who are not productive, who are not adding value. And frankly speaking, there are instances where some theft is a big issue in this country. And it's very difficult to fire a person because you have to go through a process. So these are small but very critical issues that stifle the progress that we want to address. Prof, coming back to the point that you raised, I mean, any of you obviously calling for major institutional reform. In this country, we have bodies such as NEDLAC, where government, civil society, business are part of that particular setup. What are the limitations of such structures of which uses from time to time research and evidence? And some of the issues that you have pointed to, there are evidence on the limitations of some of these policies. Why is it that such structures are not making necessary adjustments or pushing the envelope further in terms of economic reform, particularly on employment creation perspective?
Yeah, while we were at the break, I listed five clear-cut solutions which could replace triple BEE, but I'll list it for you just now. I think the after 30 years, let's take the president of our country. He's under so much pressure to keep everybody happy that he cannot take decisions. And I think some of our institutions are also like that. They don't want to change things because there's so much criticism that's going to come through. So keep everybody happy, keep the status quo like we go, but we're going deeper and deeper in this whole economic hole that we are in. I am 100% for redress and transformation and all of those things, but let me say the following. The supply chain system that the government followed with the regulations, for example, about 3 weeks back, we heard the government bought laptops for 90,000 rand each, but their normal price is about 5,000 rand. So it's about how many times more expensive? 10 times or 15 times more. And that is one example. The government is buying things and doing tenders at 5 to 10 times the cost. It's not economically viable to work like that. That is why we're going into debt more and more. And this process didn't work from that point of view. So my solution is this: in every town and city, there's a business chamber with wonderful business people. And they should be involved in the implementation of training and giving job opportunities for people as interns. 3 days of training, 2 days of work a week. The business chambers have got the capacity to do it. There's some of fantastic business chambers. It's a mixture of white and black people. There's no more just a white business chamber and a black business chamber. Those days are over. I can take you anywhere in South Africa, you'll find people are working on ground level together because they care about their local community. So those business chambers should be given funding to run these type of public works projects where we have the youths, they get trained during the week, plus they get a stipend internship at some of these businesses, and fixing roads, cleaning up the rivers that we've polluted, fixing sewer works, all of those things, infrastructure type of thing. That's my first point. The second one is we must give incentives and subsidies for companies that's creating jobs. And the next one is we must give incentives, tax rebates for mixed businesses. Black and white people coming together, starting a business or creating businesses, we must give them incentives to start that and run that business, even existing business. But if there's a proof of a joint venture between black and white South Africans, let's work together, we give them incentives and tax discounts. And then lastly, our South African business environment is the toughest in the world at this point of time, with the crime, with the taxes that you pay, all of the regulations. There's 150 small business related regulations that people must comply with. We did an analysis in a book chapter. It's unbelievable, so many. We've got the toughest environment in the world. We need to support small business in South Africa because they are the ones that's driving the economy and can create jobs. Our small business department is not doing a fantastic job. So we need to also look at our small business environment, that we will have growth. If we don't have small business development, entrepreneurship training at school, at university, all students, high school, university students must have entrepreneurship as a subject. That vibe will then start to be positive. We'll start creating small businesses. They will appoint people. People will look after themselves. So those are my five things to replace for now. I was just thinking while I was in the break, this is what I'm thinking about, the way I want to think that we can change this economy.
Absolutely. Thanks for very much, Prof, for those kinds of insights. You're not only just looking at the gaps, but you're also providing solutions. We're gravitating towards the end of the show. Let's have a last a break. But when you come back, I just want to reflect on some of the suggestions that you put forward by way of addressing labor market conditions or legislation that are stifling economic growth.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Dembele on 101.9 High FM.
It is now 6 minutes to 7 o'clock. It's amazing how time flies when you're having interesting and thought-provoking conversations from my colleague here, Professor Daniel Meyer, who is from the College of Business and Economics at the University of Johannesburg. Prof and I are looking at the pressing labor market issues. Before we went to the break, he really gave us a very interesting download in terms of what are some of the biggest challenges which he thinks, if those issues were to be addressed, we are likely to see the country through. First and foremost, he says to us, let's review the supply chain. There are instances where there is a fruitless expenditure, wherein government spent 60 to 70% more on items which, if they were procured properly, they would have saved. He also gave us insight on the need to involve local business chambers. He said local business chambers needs to be supported via funding to run internship programs on issues such as roads, sewer, and so on and so forth. So, and he also said that there has to be incentives and tax rebates for businesses that are developed by black and white folks from local spaces, for they have got interest in addressing the quagmire of their own country. The last point that Prof raised before we went to the break, in fact, the second last point was the extent to which the business environment is very tough. We've got crime and excessively regulated, policies. And for him, it is important that we begin to build a small businesses culture. And we can do that by fostering or supporting schools and universities, TVET colleges, and so on and so forth, to focus on entrepreneurship. These are some of the bits and pieces that Prof has given, have shared with us, by way of moving away, the middle from, or in terms of creating job opportunities. Prof, as we wrap up our conversation, do you believe government has institutional capability and political will to drive the structural reforms that you're making, that you put forward for you, not only one? Most commentators, research, some of the issues that you're talking about are being backed by evidence. Do you think government has the institutional capability and the political will to drive those structural reforms that you have put forward?
My honest opinion is that I haven't got too much confidence in the government that they can do these things, because it's a total structural change in the direction of the whole economic ship. And maybe the GNU, if they can work together, because they're giving stability to South Africa, but we need to have more of a business-friendly environment for these things to be successful. So I haven't got much confidence in the current situation, where the ANC is still taking some decisions on their own without discussing it with their partners. So we need a GNU that's going to operate 100% in trust, and they can work together 100%, and they will have to give. We talked about this economic indaba, or a, what do we call it, workshop, whatever, that we pull in everybody to see, okay, now we need to reset everything. Let's clean the table. Let's restart this. After 30 years, we haven't been successful. There's been some small success stories, but we haven't even talked about the local government, where 70% are bankrupt, and that is where delivery is taking place, and we're struggling there. We are, I think most people are now, the patience is over after 30 years. We need now things to happen. We need very strong leaders that can turn the ship. So your question, I'm not very, very confident in the government that can take these type of proposals and implement this. We know the government is good with some of the policies, but implementation, not very good.
Well, Prof, unfortunately, we have run out of time. We're going to leave it here. Thank you so much for giving us your thoughts, which I think have certainly change the minds of those who are listening, and we do have a government official who listen to this show, so hopefully a penny will drop.
I hope that some of my proposals were okay, and people can agree with some of it. If you don't agree, we can discuss maybe in the future, but we need to find answers, and very quickly also. We are in a crisis.
Absolutely. That was Professor Daniel Meyer from College of Business and Economics at the University of Johannesburg, giving us his thoughts, views, and perspective on very complex issues around labor market, which in his view resemble a crisis and needs to be treated as such. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. We're going to leave it here. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Shalom.